Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being with us, spending a little bit of your time and listening to whatever we say tonight, because I never know. It's always an adventure for me too. My guest tonight is Itzhak Berry, who is has an extraordinary background and is connected to many, many different groups of shamans and people studying shamanism. So I'm excited to have him here again. He's been here before. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And what better thing to discuss than binge watching on Netflix, right? Because I'm always looking for something that I haven't watched before that meets what I look for, what nurtures me, and that is a story about the struggle of light and dark and the people that are involved in both sides of that equation and the struggle, the challenge of the people who are in the light standing up to those forces of darkness. So one of my favorites is various versions of Star Trek. And there are some of those series that I love and others not so much. But in each of them, they have their ethics and their rules. And no matter what comes at them, no matter how complicated it is, no matter how evil it is, they hold themselves to the standards that they are required to work within. So they won't just randomly kill people because they're shooting at them. And it creates all kinds of fascinating ethical issues. I consider them to be modern fairy tales. When my daughter was little, Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation was the one that was on. And our bedtime ritual was to watch Next Generation and then head up to bed. And I would ask her, what was the story? What did you learn? And it was like the classic fairy tales. Einstein said, if you want your kids to be smart, read them fairy tales. And if you want them to be smarter, read them more fairy tales. So I thought I was doing a pretty good job. And I've pretty much used up the Star Trek stuff. I go back to it periodically. But I decided I was going to watch Burn Notice, which is 7 seasons. So there's a lot of stuff there. And it's about a guy who had been in the military and then became a spy and became really good at what he did. And then some people, for reasons that he hadn't figured out yet, burned him. They fired him. They made it impossible for him to work, basically took everything away from him, including his identity, and just dropped him somewhere. And the story each of the episodes starts, my name is Michael Weston. I used to be a spy. And I always wondered why they started him that way. I mean, it's interesting, and it's the continuity in the story. But you don't get it until the end of all of it, that these are really flashbacks of him telling about what happened in his life to somebody. He was telling his stories of his hero's journey to someone that was going to learn from it, not just us to be entertained. And it made me think of each one of us and our hero's journey and telling our stories. It's really important that we tell our stories. It's really important that we tell the stories so that we'll understand the lessons, but also so that other people can realize the struggles and the difficulties and what those lessons are, what we learned. Not that they won't have to learn it for themselves, but to hear what other people did. And I've been threatening to write my life story, which, people say, how'd you get here? I said, that's at least a mini series. I can't tell you that in 5 minutes. There are lots of stories, and it's it's becoming clear to me that it's important for me to start writing those stories down and to encourage other people to write down their hero's journey and see it as a hero's journey, and start telling the stories. That's all the traditions are about, learning by telling stories. So find stuff to binge watch that nurtures who you are and helps you in your journey. And that's tonight's very strange metaphysical musing. And let's have some fun with my guest, Itzhak Beery. I don't even know how to introduce you anymore because you do so much cool stuff. You've got, besides the books, and we'll talk about your latest book, and you've got a website, and you have groups and all kinds of things. So we'll talk about that as we go along. How have you been?
I'm doing very good, very busy in all kind of different things. And it's really maybe because I really don't say much no to the universe. Whatever the universe send my way, I kind of said yes. And I found out that maybe that's the most spiritual thing I'm going to ever say today, is that when the universe send you the boat, just go on it and see where it's going to take you, because you never know.
Right. So, well, I often say that a shaman is just somebody who gets to the point where they can be in a situation that everyone else is screaming to run away from, and and stand there calmly and say, "So what would you have me do now?" Of course, then there's the conversation that goes, you know, really? That's going to work? Is it going to hurt? But,
well,
you know,
that's the hero journey.
Right. Right. And that's the most important thing for people to learn, is look for the next crazy thing that's being thrown at you and go with it. Go with it.
And I kind of decided that, whatever make me fearful, whatever I feel this butterfly in my stomach, that is that fear that tells me, no, you can't do, that's enough. Then I know that it's the right thing to do. So.
Yeah, I hate that.
Oh, no. We were jumping, we were crossing with our bus on this little flimsy bridge in the Amazon, and there were people there bungee jumping, and you know, of course, my stomach like totally squished itself, and I said, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not for me. Let's just move on. And of course, we stopped, and I end up jumping. And I'm so happy I did that, because it really, you know, I would always had that feeling of what if I didn't, what if I didn't do it, and I would feel that I missed some part of myself, that hero part that went through the fear. Right. Really, this is what my life in the last 20 years or so.
well, and that's always the first question that I ask guests is, what was your journey? What was your walkabout? How did this unfold? And I know that you've gone some amazing places and had the honor of studying with some amazing shamans. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, I started, I'm a son of people who, my parents came from Belarus and Poland to Israel in 1936. They went before the war, and the last member that was alive came in 1939. So they came to Israel to build a kibbutz, and they were very atheist, that they didn't want to raise us in any kind of a Jewish religion or spirituality. And because that was the rebellion against the religious institutions in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up in a kibbutz, and in a kibbutz we celebrated holidays, but based on nature, the cycle of nature.
Right.
The harvest.
And just to clarify for people that are not familiar with kibbutzim, they are communal farms that were the beginning of Israel. It was the way that the desert was turned into agricultural land, and the way that people lived when they first got to the country.
Yes, yeah. And one of their most important thing is to learn to work the land, to love the land, to be connected to the land. And I grew up in a kibbutz on the slopes of the Mount Gilboa, which is very famous in the Bible. But it gave me an incredible introduction to shamanism, because we were so connected to nature, devoid of the spiritual or the Jewish tradition. But we grew up with Roman coins everywhere, and ancient tools and arrows, stone arrows. I mean, so we were very connected to the ancient people, but not to the religion aspects of it. But we were, so that in many ways, this is a perfect introduction to shamanism, even though I didn't know that. But I ended up moving to New York. I married and I have children, and I had an advertising agency. And when I got to my 40s, I felt like that's not it, right? There's something else to life. And I got really depressed of thinking that this is it. You know, I mean, I not that I did not win awards or did great work. I did. But it couldn't be that that's all it is for life. And
right.
Of life, and I was looking for something. So in the midst of that, I read a book by Hank Russellman, who's a wonderful shaman, who wrote a book about Hawaiian shamanism and his experiences, and a lot of these questions that I was asking myself came through with him. It was just beautiful, and it's called Visions, Spirit Walkers. So you may want to read that. It's by Hank Russellman. Anyway, so there was a book. In that book, he was writing about a workshop he did with Michael Honer. And when I came back from Hawaii reading that book, I flipped through the New York Open Center catalog, and here it was, Michael Honer giving a workshop in New York City. And so I said, well, this is a sign from God. So I enrolled. And I had incredible experience with power animals, the spirit guides, and I started to see into people's body, and I was so surprised, because the woman that I was working with, I was seeing this anaconda and river and the Amazon. It was totally very foreign to me. Well, it turned out that she was taking a trip with a guy named John Perkins. So I went a few months later. I took a workshop with John Perkins, and it was also by coincidence. And then a few months later, I went with him to Ecuador. And in Ecuador, independently, I walked with a couple of friends of mine to another shaman, Don Jose Joaquin Pineda, I had incredible experiences with him and other shamans. And then we went down to the Amazon, did ayahuasca there. That was in 1997. And somehow my world changed. Mm. And when I came back to New York, I was incredibly depressed, because I could not understand how the physical world and the spiritual world, or the seen and the unseen world, work together and manifest reality all at the same time. And my mind, my logical mind, could not hold that idea, that experiences I experienced in the metaphysical eye also manifest in the physical body. It was just too much for me to hold. So for 8 months, I was a little depressed. And then finally, one day, I just woke up and I said that it doesn't really matter, which is, anyway, it's true. I learned to accept the mystery. And then at that time, I started with other group of people, the New York Shamanic Circle, that we are now celebrating 20 years, creating a community, a shamanic community in New York City. And we continue to do it pretty powerfully. Every week there is a circle, there is activities. We bring shamans, different shamans, to do workshops. And so I think that it was all directed by my great-grandfather, who was a Kabbalistic rabbi and a healer, a thing that I learned only a few years ago in Poland, that he was directing me to do all this work. And that's really the power of the ancestral intervention. And I think that we all have that intervention with our own ancestors. And I encourage the listeners to really go and look and search their ancestor who was doing any kind of spiritual healing work. And you could see that you belong to that tribe. They are directing you to be in that community.
Well, it's fascinating in my family because there are several people I realized only decades after they were gone, were healers and metaphysicians and did all kinds of things, but they didn't talk about it that way. So there was a joke that my father's mother, my grandmother, was sort of a witch. And I thought that was just that she could, you know, make dinner for 20 people on the spur of the moment with no food in the house. But evidently there was a whole lot more to it, and she was quite an herbalist. My dad could make things happen for everybody but himself.
Well, that's a sign of a shaman.
You know, somebody would need something and he'd go, well, that has to happen. And did it his whole life. I had an aunt who just was my crazy aunt who talked to everything. She had an ongoing conversation with absolutely everything, animate and inanimate, all the time. I'm sure she didn't do that at work, but the rest of the time she did. And so, you know, and when I look back at what was likely the lineage of the people I knew, I'm third generation. But I didn't know it then, and we wouldn't have talked about it that way.
Yes, and I think that is very important to talk about it now, because we used to grow in communities, in families, that they pass on stories and history of the families, and we no longer do that. I mean, how many families really share their experiences, and they live so far away, or they even don't talk to each other. But I think that it's important, because these are our spiritual DNA. It's our DNA, real DNA. It belongs to all these people that came before us. And if we don't really know that stories, if we don't ask these questions, how can we know ourselves?
Well, it's interesting to me, especially for folks like us, Eastern European Jews, with all the struggles that went on the last two generations, to just realize the heroism and intention that it took to go across Europe by horse and train to a steamship to a place that you didn't know anybody. To come to America to start a new life. What kind of internal intention and heroism did that take? And that's true, you know, you could say that about any number of different groups of people that came to the United States in large numbers. You know, what comes to mind is the Irish and Italians in New York. But you listen to some of those stories with a different ear, and realized that they were doing extraordinary things, getting things done with nothing. And it was all that they just believed it would happen, and they had the intention to do it.
Yeah, and you also want to remember the economic and the social condition in Europe. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It was really very difficult. You know, I went to visit my family village in Kolno in Poland, on the border of Belarus. There's nothing much to that place. You know, it's just in the middle of this horizon, and there is nothing there, and the winters are cold, and there's really poor, and the economic situation very bad. So a lot of the immigration that that went to the United States it came because people just could not see their future there anymore.
Right.
They wanted something better for themselves. And we still, this is one of the major forces of immigration into the United States. Not that the people who are now living in the United States are so happy about that. yeah.
Well, and that's always been true. I mean,
yeah.
We're going to talk more about shamanism and not about New York and Eastern Europe, but the story of how the neighborhoods change and how each group that's been there and claimed a neighborhood doesn't want the next group to come in. And the turnover in New York is about every 30 years, a new ethnic group comes in. That's an extraordinary story. And fascinating, was part of my childhood.
Yeah.
I want to make sure before we go to the break that people know where to find you online. And
okay,
I know you have several websites, so let's tell them about that.
So my personal website is my name, itzhakbeery.com, itzhakbeery.com. And I'm also the publisher, founder of Shaman Portal, which is the website. It's like a resource center or a hub for the international shamanic community. And we have a different listing of all shamans and healers and books and links and articles and news and you name it. You can find all the information about the global shamanic community. And also, if you are in New York and you're interested in shamanic work, go to nyshamaniccircle.org, nyshamaniccircle.org. And we have all these activities throughout the year. Then please come and join us. We've seen our community growing amazingly and throughout the years, and it's really rewarding.
And I also want you to mention your latest book. We'll talk more about it after the break.
Sure.
What's the new book?
Well, the new book is called appropriately Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. And in many ways, it's divided into four sections. One talks about the my journey. The second is about the need to integrate Western medicine and shamanic alternative and all these alternative healing, and about the state of the sick care in the United States. The third one is different techniques of shamanic healing that you can use at your home or for yourself or for other people. And the fourth one is 30 stories of shamanic healing and their results that are physical, emotional, spiritual, and they are categorized by Western inflictions. Because in the shamanic tradition, we don't label disease. Right. So I label them in the restaurant.
Sounds wonderful. I'm looking forward to reading it. So we're getting ready to go to the break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest is Itzhak Berry, and this is the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back, and we'll have more fun.
You're listening to Empower Radio, an entire radio station devoted to your personal development, expanding your conscious awareness, and empowering positive change. Meet our hosts and listen online at EmpowerRadio.com, on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone or tablet. It's free in the App Store, and it lets you listen to our shows and podcasts on demand. Empowering people, empowering change. Empower Radio, online at EmpowerRadio.com.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found? Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
This message is for all of you sitting in the passenger seat. And apologies if it gets a little uncomfortable, but how does it feel to be at the mercy of someone who thinks a random text is more important than your life? Someone who takes their eyes off the road while speeding along in a 3-ton hunk of steel. Freaky, right? Well, why not just ask them to stop? Or better yet, volunteer to text for them. It might be a little awkward, but believe me, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
An entire station devoted to your personal development. Welcome to Empower Radio.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Itzhak Berry. And I was just told during the break, Matt is our studio magician that makes it sound like we're all sitting in the same room and tweaks all the sound and all that stuff. And he just told me that his girlfriend is listening for the first time. So, Leslie, thank you so much for listening. That's very cool. Where were we? We were somewhere either in Eastern Europe or New York or South America, which is kind of the whole point of this, is the journey is wherever you are taken and what you're supposed to learn in each of those adventures. So
yeah,
I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I think that the journey is it's so interesting that my journey started in East Europe, in Poland, Belarus, moved to Israel, and then I moved here, and then my teachers were from Ecuador and Brazil, and I'm teaching all over the world these teachings. And in that teaching, I went back into my roots and I started to work with a Kabbalistic rabbi who was teaching me Kabbalah a little bit. And so in many ways, I'm closing a circle with my great-grandfather and I'm doing his work. I do healing work and I teach people. And so it's kind of fascinating that if we are running away from our roots, somehow spirit bring us back to where we need to be.
Right, right. Look over here. It's the same thing. You think it's not, but it's the same thing over here. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Very quickly, it's a local friend of mine wrote an incredible book about the Baal Shem Tov. She basically channeled his life. It's called The Tremble of Love. And it gave me a totally different sense of the shamanic underpinnings of mystical Judaism and the Hasidic way and all of that stuff. I had no idea.
Of course. I mean, this is a Jewish shamanism. I mean, you can go back into reading into the Bible and you can see all the shamanic experiences and ceremonies, rituals, plants, healing, and all of that is all written into the Bible.
Well, and clearly Moses, for one, was somebody who was called on by God and was a shaman. What do you want me to do? Where should I go? There are several stories like that in the Bible where somebody is just, you're the one, and just listen to me and do what I tell you. It'll all be fine.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about your book, which just sounds wonderful. I love the way you laid it out and the idea behind it. What other kinds of things are you working with or at the moment, or is there new stuff you've been doing that surprised you along the way?
I'm actually now doing a 7-week course with the Shift Network, teaching shamanic healing to people all around the world. It is very exciting to be able to share some of the content of the book with people. I'm teaching really around the world. I just came back from Amsterdam. I'm going to Israel to teach, and I'm going to be teaching in Italy and the Bahamas and in Ecuador. I take groups to trips to the jungle and to the Andes to do medicine work there. So there's amazing work, and it's so interesting to see. Oh, I'm going to be in Montana doing, of all places, to do an intensive work, teaching of shamanic healing from the Ecuadorian Brazilian perspective, and I hope there's going to be a lot of people there. And my goal is to spread those techniques and teachings so people in the West could use them and see the effectiveness of that. Because as you know, and that's part of the book, is that 39% of all Americans are not using allopathic medicine, Western right. medicine. They are using alternative medicine. It's almost $40 billion a year spending on people like you and me. And you know, like for the book, I was doing a lot of research, and I'm quite surprised. You know, like 10% of all Americans are depressed.
Yeah, usually.
30 million people are depressed. 15% of all Americans are living with one pill a day, and 60% of Americans living with one pill a day, and 15% live at least with 5 pills every day. We look right. at with the consumer market that the medical industry created. You know, 1,000 people each day dies in hospitals for preventable causes. I'm not saying people who just die in hospital, but people who should not have died in hospital. In the United States, is 440,000 people each year about. So it's almost like 1,000 a day that die in the United States. And this is almost like the third largest causes of death in the United States is from preventable causes in medicine. So there must be some kind of a movement or anger or some kind of a, we all know that Western medicine is great on technology and save people's life with surgeries, and we're doing incredible work with that. But the what's missing in all of it is the community aspect of it, the ritual, the soul, the emotional part of it, and there's a lot of illnesses that alternative medicine can handle without going into unnecessary procedure, expensive procedures in hospitals. And so I truly believe that a marriage of the two systems is a must for our own survival. And that's really what why I wrote this book. Mm-hmm. And it also came because of my personal experience. I had a friend who was a great healer, alternative healer. He did a lot of work with so many people, and he was in his 40s, and he discovered that he had a cancer on his tongue, and he thought he could heal it himself. And he did all the alternative healing, and I lost him because he was so stubborn. He didn't want to go to hospital. He didn't want to use the Western methods of cancer treatment. I dragged him into hospitals, and he threatened to refuse to see me if I continue to do that. So I think that there are stubbornness on both sides. People who are believing in alternative medicine, and they swear by it for religious purposes or for spiritual purposes, and then there's those who would not budge from just using Western medicine that can mm-hmm. actually lead to their death. So I think that it must be some kind of a way to bring these two systems together. And I've done that. You know, I go to hospitals to my clients and do ceremonies before surgeries or before they pass away. And it's really a great help for them because their body is really more relaxed, is more allowing the procedures, the methods, the energy that has come from the medicine to work better because they don't fight that. So there's a great way of bringing these two systems together, and this is really what the book is about. And plus it's give people ways to use shamanic medicine in their privacy of their home, or to use it with their children and families, and so they don't have to take headaches pills or painkillers, or they can take bath or work with different plants and use different minerals to bring their body back into good health. So I think it's a very important book in that sense, and that's what the reviews of people who read it also testify for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Western medicine I like to think of as being good for emergencies. If something is life-threatening and there's an intervention that needs to happen right now, all that technology and other things, and mechanical things, you know, it's
yes.
nice yeah, to be yeah. able to replace mechanical parts that break. But in terms of chronic illness or ongoing wellness, that's not part of the model. It's not the way they look at things. Even in terms of really having a good sense of nutrition or other things that support basic health needs. And that's, you know, that's a weakness in that model and that system and the training and all the rest of it, that the quote unquote alternative, which is really more traditional healing methods that have been around forever.
Yeah.
That those things work with, you know, is how do I stay healthy? If I'm feeling not quite right, how do I bring myself back in balance so I don't get sick? All of those kinds of things that have to do with what you do every day to stay well.
That's right. Our system of what we call the healthcare, it's actually a sick care. It's not, right. It doesn't work with your health. The whole purpose of Western medicine is to nip the symptoms out, to fix what's wrong. But the shamanic healing purpose is to find the roots, the causes of the sickness or the illness that came and create that symptoms and conditions. So there's two different outlook. One is, I call it hit and run.
That's accurate.
Hit and run medicine, that it, you know, people come in and get treatment, and nobody cares about what they, as long as the symptoms are not there, that you are fine. You have to fill up the form so you can get paid, and you're sent away.
Right.
That's the hit and run, and then you have the shamanic healing that asks you where you come from, what you like to eat, who are you. Are you angry? Where is this cancer came from? Is it come from anger? What is the anger for? So the healing is a deeper healing from the roots of all of that. It's totally a different way of looking at it. And I think that we can't afford to have two separate systems so different than each other. We have to find a way to integrate them to be more holistic and preventable. System that in the last case scenario you go into Western medicine, but if we can afford to, if we can build a system that insurance companies will support, I mean, I know that it sounds idealistic, especially now with this Congress or Senate, and that is totally cruel. A bunch of people there, but if we can find a way to demand that we will become humans, that we will be responsible for each other, that's the system that I envision.
Right. Yeah. It's as the old Chinese curse goes, we live in interesting times, and it'll be strange to see how this settles out in the short term, because I don't think it's going to be very long term, before all this craziness that they're doing just collapses in on itself and we get something new. And of course, everybody is afraid of what that something new will be. So,
but you know, from the shamanic point of view, we really have to look at the root causes of that cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it come from that people are seeking to harm other people in a matter of policy?
I have come to the conclusion, and which is not a huge leap if you take a quick look, capitalism is based on greed.
Mm-hmm.
Colonialism is exporting capitalism with the idea that the people that you're going to displace or kill don't matter because they're not like you.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's their skin color or their religion or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We not only have not grown out of that, it's the history of this country It's how this country took this land and created its economy. But that energy is still there, and that's what's coming out now. There are people who have a lot of money, and they're the ones that count. And there are people that don't have money, and doesn't matter what happens to them, and we'll squeeze them for everything we can get out of them, but we're not going to worry. And that's a very, very old historic way of treating people.
Yeah.
And the point to American democracy, I think, was to prevent that, to not have royalty, to not have feudalism, even though we started the country and had slavery in place and a lot of other ironies. But that was the idea of democracy, that the people had a way to participate and that there wasn't this entrenched wealth and power. And here we are, we're back where all that started. So yeah.
We're making America great again, right?
Well, we're going back to something very old and very dense and dark.
Yeah, and I think the conflict is that we are living now in a digital world where we are all so connected. The veil is definitely more transparent. People really understand that institutions don't, these international institutions, the banks, the hospitals, the pharmaceutical, the oil companies, they are a symbol of an old world that doesn't function anymore. And I think that most people understand that we are looking for a new model. We are looking for solar energy, free energy, equality of people, equality of women and men, equality of gay and straight, that equality of racism. That's the new model. There's the new generation would not stand for this old way of thinking because it impaired their future, and the technology doesn't support it anymore. The world that we created doesn't support that dark vision of life.
Well, this is in all the prophecies, the transition between a period of intense darkness and a period of light and love and cooperation that we don't even understand yet. And this is the transition and the chaos as the two systems struggle against each other. So it was expected, it's been predicted in almost every prophecy that this would be a period of chaos and craziness and grief, and it won't last long though. You know, because there's so much light on the planet and because of the transparency, you know, that everybody can find things out so quickly, the kinds of things that used to be hidden are no longer hidden.
Yeah.
You know, the way I look at it, there's so much light that there are no shadows to hide in anymore. And that's terrifying for the people that really want shadows to hide in.
Well, they fire the people who investigate them.
Right. Right. I think that's going to backfire. Well, let's not get into the politics and international politics of all of it, because
yeah, I wrote an article at the Reality Sandwich website, and it's called "Trump is Possessed." What can a wake up call?
Yeah,
you may want to read that because in the shamanic tradition, you look for symptoms of people who are possessed by evil spirit, and especially in South America, those teachings, those customs are very strong. And so those symptoms that we are looking for in clients where they have possession, like the body movement, the jerky body movement, the
changes in the eyes and
the changes in the eyes, the inconsistency, the constant shape shifting of personalities, the lies that they need to say to present themselves in a different light. These are very much the symptoms that Trump and his people around him present to yourself. So in the shamanic tradition, Trump is possessed by evil spirit that are trying to control or to do that fight you were talking about, that between the evil or the dark forces and the light forces. He's the messenger of that. And the only reason why he could be chosen for that is because of his deep fear, that he possessed such deep terror and fear in himself that those evil spirits can enter into his body or into an energy body and direct him to do all of those things that he does. Because a person who is balanced cannot do that.
Right. And I think of all the people that he's brought together, he's not the one that I worry about the most. I think there are people who are consciously evil and involved in the dark stuff, and Trump is not conscious of what's going on. And it's, you know, how did we get here in this conversation? And it's horrible that the conversation is even there to be had.
Started the conversation early. The opening statement was about the dark and
light. Right. Forces. And that struggle is, at least so far on this planet, has always been there. And we're watching it play out in some very, very strange ways. It's scary. It's scary. It's crazy.
Yeah, in the shamanic tradition of the Mayan and the Inca, we are talking about a new Pachacuti, a new Bactun in the Mayan tradition.
Right.
That it is the 500 years after the killing of the Inca king, Atahualpa, a new period of time began, which is in 1993-95. And they prophesize that the eagle of the south, the condor of the south, which represent the southern philosophy, the sustainable living, working from the heart, taking care of the earth, the feminine energies,
right,
will fly in the same sky with the eagle of the north. And the eagle of the north represent the masculine forces, the builder, the real estate builder, the occupier, the colonialist, bird that fly high in the sky but are really looking for prey to kill, where right. The condor fly high in the sky to digest the death and produce it and fertilize the earth. So they are very, very different two big birds. But the prophecy is that the new Pachacuti will bring the two parts of this, the heart and the mind, to fly together in the sky. And it will be a very difficult time.
As we always do, we get into a long conversation and run out of time, and I need to cut you off, and I'm very sorry.
Okay.
Because this has been very juicy and very wonderful. My guest tonight is Itzhak Berry, and as you can tell, he knows a lot, and you can go to itzhakberry.com or the Shaman Portal and get more of his information, look for his book. Thank you so much for being on the show. This was so much
You're very
fun.
Welcome, David. It's my pleasure to be here again and talk to you, and I hope to have another opportunity.
We'll do it again. And if anybody got curious about who's this guy David and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com. One of the things there is a link to schedule a 20-minute free phone conversation to assess what's going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever it might be, and see how my work might be helpful. You can also go to thefarkasfiles.com for more information about the show and the show archive, but We're on every streaming media outlet, and we also have the Empower Radio app, which makes it very, very easy to listen not only to the Farkas Files, but to all of the other shows on Empower Radio, because Empower Radio has shows 24/7 that are uplifting, fascinating, and just good stuff for your soul. So until next week, thank you one and all for being with us. And this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.